This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the DRF Players Podcast. It's the August 22nd, 2017 edition, show number 262. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you from the little house on the east side, joined once again by Muggs, the handicapping Labrador. Sometimes the yard guy comes during this hour. We may get a proper fit from Muggs, the handicapping Labrador, if that happens during the course of the show. She's not our only guest today. We also have returning to the program, Mr. Frequent Flyer Miles himself, the people's champion, Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's going on today?
Oh, man, I literally don't even know where I'm at.
Are you back on the planet Texas, I was assuming? Did you not make it?
I am. No, I'm back. I'm back. No, it's just, I was going to add it up. I haven't done it yet. I think since June 30th, I think I've taken off like over 30 times.
Well, I have a feeling, and we'll do a little production meeting in the middle of the show now. I know you've been feeling super guilty about the fact that you were billed for a Pavilion Tent Naira Bet sponsored show on a Saturday at Saratoga early in the meet. And you've been so guilty about it that you're thinking about upping that number to 32 by making one more trip to Spa City before it's all said and done. And what better time to do it than Travers Day? Is that are the rumors true, JK?
It's possible. I was non-committal, and at the Travers wasn't ever really going to work. I thought I was either going to have to film or have some life things to do, and it turns out that I don't have life or to film for the TV show Win Play Show. So it looks like the weekend has now become open, and what better place to spend it than there with you guys?
Very nice, very nice. Let's segue directly to our top story, but one quick question related to the first topic for the show today. Were you alive to a five-figure score on Arrogate Saturday night?
No.
Well, so that's not, I was just assuming you were, and that's the reason he got beat. What, in all seriousness, what happened out there?
You know, I want to hear your impressions. You know what? You know what? You know what I actually was. I don't know what it, okay, you're right. Here's the thing. I wasn't alive, right? I was alive to, but I wasn't the pay leg. I played a $50 cross-country pick four where I singled Proctor's Ledge, which we'll talk about, I'm sure. And then I went three deep, like I said I was going to go in the Alabama using a late. Actually, I said I was going to go four deep. I ended up not using Salty. I went three deep, used a late, and then I singled Arrogate, and then I used the three horses that I thought could win the Del Mar Oaks, and two of them were in a nasty, nasty photo, and Dream Dancing won. So yeah, technically it did cost me some money. I don't know what it would have paid. I think I paid $400 for 50 cents with Arrogate getting beat. The rough math I did in my head was it would pay $50.
Right.
Is that about right, you think?
Feels good.
Felt good, yeah. So $100 times 55,000. So I was alive for 5,000 ish when he got beat.
Not quite five figures, but a solid four figure score. So now it's all answered. He'll come back. He'll run in the Pacific Classic. Baffert will give you something to not play the sequence, and then we'll see the real Arrogate, a prospect I know Muggs is very excited about. Yes, let's talk seriously about this race for a minute, Jonathan. I have some strong feelings that might go against the grain, but I want to start with you. You were out there. You had a chance to see it with your own eyes. What? Give us a little summation of what happened at the Pacific Classic for those who may have been living under a rock and didn't see it, and then offer your thoughts for a minute.
You know, I think one of the main things that's important is the connections that are involved and the fact that they're at least – continuing to persevere at this point. It just says to me that it reminds us that they're animals, and there's some things about them you got to kind of work through. And I overheard Mike having a private conversation at this situation we were at on Saturday night, and the topic that he just seemed to say that, like, the horse has just kind of been goofy a little bit lately, and he never really, he said he had a horse, he just never really was really kind of into it. Not that he
was,
like,
looked like.
Not that he's like lame or he doesn't want to run anymore, but that he just seems a little bit like, whatever.
He's not the same. He's not the same animal. I mean, to preview my point of view, he's not the same animal, but you can do.
And then I spoke to Nick Luck, who made a good point, and I guess maybe it's just his European way of looking at things. We don't really think of making changes on great horses this late, but he said like he thinks a set of blinkers would do Arrogate some good.
Interesting. Very interesting idea. That's the way he ran, because it was Fitz. We'll get back. I'll give you more chance to talk, but I'm boiling over here. The way he ran, just visually watching the race, was fits and starts. Run for 50 yards, idle for 50 yards. And like multiple times to me, like switching on and off during the course of the race. And that is just the absolute opposite of the horse we saw during that tremendous run that included, of course, the Travers, the Breeders' Cup, the Pegasus, and the Dubai World Cup. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that might be, but just visually, and we'll get to the figure discussion before it's all said and done, but just visually to me, that was not behavior you were going to see from the Arrogate during that during that winning streak. What do you continue with your analysis of this, please?
No, I completely agree. I also think that, I don't know if this was part of that evening or just what I heard around the track or if it was an NBC interview or something like that afterwards. But I also heard like Mike kind of describe it as like it's just funny. He's never been on a horse that's run bad and almost won a grade one like that. It's like he said, and if you know, and if you watched the race at the 3/8 pole, I thought it was going to happen again. Like I thought like, oh, he's going to be up the track again and we're never going to see him again. He's going to finish fourth, fifth. And then he just like kind of like goofily kind of came out at the quarter pole, like around that horse. He caught Accelerate because Accelerate was stopping, but Collected wasn't stopping, and he was still running at him. It's just a weird, weird thing, and I don't really understand what to make of it. I'd love to sit down and have an adult beverage and get a full explanation, but Bob Keem seems to think that he messed Arrogate's psyche up by running him in the San Diego. I don't know if he just wasn't ready, if it was too short, or for whatever reason, but Bob felt like he needed to put a prep into him instead of training him up to it. And he's taking blame as that he messed up the horse's psyche. I wonder what he means by that exactly. I mean, I can make my assumptions and guess what he means by that. But, you know, look, I'm still on board, to be honest. As weird as it sounds, it's just the horses run too bad. I mean, and here's the thing, right? He runs bad. Everyone's acting like he lost a step. You're in a 114 buyer.
Well, let's talk about the figure. I mean, this was – I'm trying to – as we talk, I'm struggling here trying to pull up Craig's figure on Timeform US to see if it falls into line. The day at Del Mar was a figure maker's nightmare, really, because it's the only dirt route on the day. So you're – and the way that – from my assessment, and I have to give a shout-out to Sean Borman, pro player friend and friend of the podcast, for making this observation, to make – Arrogate's figure anywhere near that 114, you have to say the track was completely different in terms of the variant for that route race than it was for the sprint races. That makes my teeth itch. Especially at Del Mar, a track I've heard Craig say, typically the route variant and sprint variant. And for those who, if we're going too far down the rabbit hole, the variant is the assessment by the figure maker of how fast or slow the track was playing on a given day. And so to me, there's some serious projecting going on in the 114 figure. Now, I get it. Projecting is part of figure making, and it's logical when you look at all the figures lined up like that. That the conclusion is logical. I'm not saying it's a bad figure, but it's a figure that has a whole lot of guesswork in it. And we've seen this before. The example I'll give, first I'll start with a question. JK, Rachel Alexandra at 4, was she the same as she was at 3? Was she just as good?
No, but that's Philly. It's a Philly thing, isn't it? I mean, aren't Phillies more
likely to cut? It could be, the point I'm making is, if you just looked at her speed figures, you could say the answer to that question is yes. If you watch races, I think it's pretty clear the answer to that question is no.
Yeah, but the thing about Rachel is, though, real quick, is that she, her entire four-year-old year was a tail off. I mean, obviously it was very early, but Arrogant ran, he won the Pegasus as a four-year-old.
Well, I'm viewing his, because of the way it worked with the Pegasus and the World Cup, I'm viewing the change as happening between, obviously, the World Cup, I think, is his best race. So I'm viewing the change as in the layoff. No horse could be blamed for running four races like those and that taking a lot of the starch out of him and being a peak and never being able to get back to that peak. And that's what I'm suggesting has happened since this layoff. I mean, it's also possible the horse is just cycling back up with the San Diego being the dud that it was. This being a race where, I mean, I can give you a positive assessment of the Arrogant Pacific Classic. Here's a horse who ran half a race and still almost won a grade one in a figure you could argue is 114. You know, maybe he's sitting on a big race to come back to. Maybe Baffert's thinking all along about Classic, Pegasus, even Dubai one more time, and maybe, you know, maybe he's on course. I don't see it that way, but I could spin it that way. For me, I'll be honest. Like, I was sad after the race on Saturday. Like, that's how different I thought he looked. And as much of a numbers guy I am, and as much as I obviously respect and couldn't do without the Buyer Speed figures, like, that number alone isn't going to make – it's going to make me say, hey, okay, there's another way of looking at this. I'm not necessarily right. But my gut feeling is he's done enough, and he's going to be a bet against in the Breeders' Cup Classic Ali Holmes style, if you catch the reference.
The thing about it is this is going to be weird and people will probably disagree with me, but if he runs, I'll keep picking him if he's running. I just think he's a superior animal who is trying to figure some things out with a Hall of Fame trainer and a Hall of Fame rider who will get those things figured out. And if there was something wrong with him, he just wasn't the same horse. I just don't think they would keep going on and on and on like this. I just don't think they would.
I think they've, I mean, this sounds so harsh, but I'm just going to say it. I think they fooled themselves into thinking he's the same horse when he's not, if they keep persevering. And I mean, and there's some good evidence to think, or like I said, it doesn't have to be that. It could also be, hey, he ran those four huge races. It's taken him a long time to recover from, you know, putting up those type of efforts, traveling around the world. And then there's also this idea, which may have merit. He doesn't do his best work at Del Mar. I mean, I think it's worth discussing. What's your take on that idea first?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say he doesn't do his best work at Del Mar, but at the same time, like, that tricks me a little bit because I'm not really sure I understand that. Right. Okay. So, let's start with the main part of it that's confusing to me. One is the surface change at Del Mar was to bring in the exact same dirt surface that they're using at. I got it, buddy. We still got. I'm sorry. The surface that they're using at Del Mar is the same dirt surface that they use at San Anita. So that's the first part of it that's confusing for me. The second part is like,
I can answer that part.
And I know that I understand the water and the ocean and the tide makes it different. But here's the other thing. The horses run well at Santa Anita. He's won well at Saratoga. He's run well at Gulfstream and in the desert after it rained for like 4 hours. And then it was he's typically not a horse that has to bring his racetrack with it.
No, I mean, I agree. I'm not saying I fully buy it, but if you wanted to make, I mean, I don't really buy it, but if you wanted to make, I think my explanation is sort of the Occam's razor explanation. But I will say this, in that visual handicapping, a horse that, you know, runs and idles like that, it just didn't seem, if you're searching for explanations, and as handicappers, as human beings, we always want explanations. Even when they're not there, sometimes we'll just come up with one to fit the circumstance. Unfortunately, that's how good we are at seeing patterns in things. We see them when they're not even there. But one thing that could explain that is he's not happy getting over it. And I mean, to me, I don't buy the tides thing at Del Mar at all. That's like way too flaky for me. That's that's another level of strange. But I will say this, the atmospheric conditions are different. That's going to have an effect on the surface. You know, you can't just use the same surface and put it in the San Gabriel Valley and put it on the water in North County and expect it to play the same. Also, as we've seen from new surfaces at Saratoga this year, they can be quirky. They can be weird. They can take some time. And the idea that a horse would have an issue with it or that it would be different, I mean, I can accept the notion. I think one of the – to return to the Ollie Holmes analogy, I mean, for me, that's the Breeders' Cup in a nutshell with him coming back, especially at Del Mar against a sharp horse like Gunrunner. I just feel like, and you know what I'm, you follow the Ollie Holmes thing. I wish I had the odds in front of me, but do you know what I'm talking about when I say that? You're probably too young.
Too young, but I have an idea what you're talking about.
You know, Ollie's the big, Ollie's off form, shell of his former self, still the favorite against challenger in great form, Holmes. And it was an opportunity to make a lot of money if you put sentimentality aside and just bet Larry Holmes. So I think there's a story in Len Ragazin's book about that as one of the great betting opportunities he ever saw, actually. But I, I'll make that bet hoping I'm wrong and would love to cheer the horse on and would love to see him come back. And I'm not saying there's a 0% chance of the real Arrogant showing up and running off the screen in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but I just don't think that's the way to bet. So we'll have to have a similar disagreement to the one we had on Friday when that happens. I guess there's also a possibility of him. You'd almost think he'd want to run one more time before the Classic, wouldn't you? Or no?
No, I think he's going to take the American Pharoah approach and just train him up.
Okay. And also the Arrogant approach.
From, 100%.
From last year.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I don't see why he would. You know, I feel like he felt like he's messed the horse's psyche up, maybe sending him out a little bit short last time, kind of threw him off a little bit, or two times ago. So I think maybe I heard him on Bick a little bit, and it just seemed like there was really not even a question. That's exactly
they're going to train up. It's interesting. I mean, I get that much more off a tippity top level effort, like what happened those last 2 years. But right, I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You won the Classic 2 years in a row. Doing the same thing. I guess you're right. My idea probably isn't good. I was just thinking you run in the Jockey Club Gold Cup or whatever, and it might also answer that Del Mar question. Let's say he ran off the screen in New York, but then you're still talking about going back there for the Classic. And it probably just makes more sense. He's had such success doing this. Obviously, the guy knows more than I do. But I'll have to check that out on Bick. That sounds like it was a good interview. People should obviously go to stevebick.com and download the interview. We're not trying to give everything away here. Steve does a great job, and I firmly believe that listening to his show, his podcast, is the fastest way you can become an insider in horse racing. But that said, just what was Baffert's – it was it the same thing sort of after the race where he was like the saddest guy to ever run 1-2 in a grade one, or had he perked up a little bit at that point?
It perked up a little bit. I think that right when it's over, I think that a lot of the times you become sad because you're really concerned that something's wrong. Like that you're going to why is he running like this? There's going to be an issue. It kind of adds to your sadness. Then once it's over and you realize he's okay and that everything's fine, and then you reflect on it a little bit of things you can probably do differently. He seemed to have a much better attitude about it when I was listening yesterday than he did, right after the race.
For the record, a 132 buyer speed figure, time form figure, so that's very much in line with what happened on the buyer scale. I get it. From a figure-making point of view, that's the right figure to give probably, but just because of the unique circumstances of the day and how difficult a figure it was to earn, I'm not quite taking it at face value. I hope I'm proven wrong, but that's sort of where I am with it. Let's talk about some of the other stakes races from the weekend. JK, I'll let you lead the way a little bit here. What performances in particular impressed you?
I thought Proctor's Ledge was really good. it's Naira, so there was no pace. She sat back and made that kind of sweeping 5-4, 5-6 wide move into a slow pace and then drew away from him. I typically have the group I was sitting with. They're all great horse players. You know, the Man in Black, Loot, some of the other guys. They're obviously huge fans of the game, but they sometimes don't remember some of the details. And I reminded them that Proctor's Ledge, and all of our tournament players will remember this, is the filly that everyone in the room had that was 40-1 on NHC Saturday.
Yep.
Now she's turned out to be, you know, probably the best 3-year-old turf filly in the country. So that's pretty impressive. I thought that race was really, really, really.
She was good.
Yeah, she was nice.
I'll take Uni in the rematch.
And then we will definitely have a head to head on that one.
Perfect. Really, I mean, to me, Uni, not one who has. She's not a turn of foot filly. She's more of a grinder. And like, you give me a grinder in, you know, last through those fractions, coated blue all the way throughout by Timeform US, and you put this back instead of a 5-horse field when the same division is running, you know, a nominal grade one on the other coast on the same day, you put a little bit more of a best of group of these fillies together and you give me some pace, and I firmly believe Uni mows Proctor's Ledge down.
I firmly disagree. But okay,
go ahead. Well, explain why. You can't.
Explain. Yeah,
why.
I mean, Uni was a little bit behind her. I get that. I just think Forever. I mean, I'm thinking about another race already. Geez, Forever Unbridled. I just think Proctor's Ledge is more tactical. She can kind of put herself into the race a little bit more, and that could be beneficial.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. My scenario depends on there being pace and a fuller field, but I just think there's more than meets the eye there with Uni. I could be wrong. La Coronel, we haven't crowed at all about our performance in picks on the Friday show, but I give you full marks, JK, for explaining why she might be vulnerable. You still probably expected she'd hit the board there, though, didn't you?
No, I mean, I wouldn't have talked anyone off of that, but I wouldn't bridge jump her. Here's the thing, right? Is like,
or me.
It's weird. I felt really weird about it the other day because I couldn't. I guess maybe I didn't explain it very well, and I think I can try to explain it now. But it's weird that my pick in the Del Mar Oaks was based off of Dream Dancing's work with La Coronel, but. I didn't think La Coronel was good enough to beat the field that she was facing on the East Coast, and I thought it was more of an endorsement for Dream Dancing and obviously a negative tout for La Coronel. So it's weird that kind of happened, but it's, you know, usually when I like a horse based off a workout, it's because I like who the horse was working with, and I didn't like who the horse was working with, but it still led me to Dream Dancing. Who was very fortunate in her race to not get beat by Simon Callahan's horse, Beau Recall.
That was in the Del Mar Oaks, of course. Dream Dancing just getting up in the shadow of the wire, making folks who bet the podcast picks very happy, and hopefully helping some folks out in the cross country pick four as well. Going forward, what do you think we're going to see from each of La Coronel and Dream Dancing?
Well, they're owned by the same person. So that, you know, I think Mr. Oxley owns both of them. So, that will be interesting. I think La Coronel probably needed one. Unfortunately, I think what happens sometimes is you kind of throw horses to the wolves. And I think that's might've what happened with La Coronel. They might've thrown her to the wolves. They almost threw her to the wolves Derby weekend against the boys, decided not to, ran her against the girls. She won. And then they decided to send her out to Ascot, and she ran into a monster out there. Comes back here, probably needed this race. I would imagine we'll see her at Keeneland for the QE2, but that doesn't seem like it's going to be an easy race either. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's definitely the possibility that she's just off form, but you could also forgive it off a European layoff, coming back at a mile and an eighth. Several reasons to give La Coronel an excuse. It just seems like there's others in the division right now who've stepped up, including the two that we talked about earlier, Proctor's Ledge and Uni, who my mind would be more drawn to in a race like the QE2. But we'll get to see in a little over a month's time at Keeneland. Hopefully Keeneland will still let me back in the doors and we can sit and watch that one. Fall Stars, or that's not Fall Stars, that's later in the meet in the green room. Could be, you know, it's one of those races I always love. It's, in a way, I'm a little torn about having these big races for three-year-olds later in the year. There's something very appealing about that more European way of doing it, where come the fall, that's when the three-year-olds take on their elders. And now we have races, you know, a race like the Pennsylvania Derby has taken a lot of the starch out of the Jockey Club Gold Cup, for example, because you're not going to run in both, and it just makes more sense economically for the owners of the three-year-olds to stick with their own sex rather than take on elders. But I still, a race like QE2, restricted or not, always fun to check out. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens there. We haven't talked about the Alabama yet. JK, what'd you make of Elate's performance there?
I called Travis Stone right before the race, and I said, hey, man, like, if anyone just tweets you about this morning line, just tag me, and I'll help you defend yourself. I can't believe that the two inside horses, New Money Honey and the Jerkins horse, took as much money as they took. I mean, I felt like that was free money on Elate, and she ran well. I mean, it's weird those races when they're running a mile and a quarter with those fillies. A lot of them like appear to be stagger fests, but she really was finishing well, and it's. You know, I think a lot of people always expected that she would run well at a mile and a quarter, considering her breeding. And kudos to Jose Ortiz for another grade one. And he carried on that magic yesterday as well with five wins. So I thought she ran really well. I like that they tried New Money Honey on the dirt. I would assume that she'll go back to the turf. I thought Elate was good.
1:23 on time form. I obviously look at the buyers just as much as time form, but I have the time form ones right in front of me, so it makes life so easy. But that's a serious figure, and I think there's no question that the 10 furlongs, as we suspected they might, suited her. And it'll be fun to see if she can sort of go on with it a little bit and continue to have luck and capitalize on all that promise we saw from her debut last year and put some of the – I mean, she has Elate has plenty of excuses for the seemingly subpar efforts, but I'm hoping it's not just the mile and a quarter that allowed her to bring out her best. What do you think? I mean, do you think she can cut back and look as good as she did on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I thought she ran well in the Coaching Club American Oaks. I mean, I think she needs a mile and an eighth. I don't think she's a mile and a 16th flat mile type of filly. I think the further the better for her. And what better hands would you want her in than Bill Mott's? I mean, there's a lot of things that Bill Mott does not do as well as Chad, Todd, and Bob, right? We all get that. That's fine. But there's one thing that no one can argue is when he gets a good horse, he can keep that horse good for a long period of time. And that's what's exciting about having a horse like that in his barn.
Absolutely. Nobody better with a grade one target than Mott. And you're right. That's the category in which I would take him over the other, in my mind anyway, I'd be inclined to go with him over any of the other three, because you're going to probably get a little bit of a better price despite all the fame with Mott than those other, the rest of those guys up in the stratosphere of training.
You know, it's one of the fun and the most fun questions, and we've done this before too, Pete, and for the sake of our friends and the people we know, that we won't do it on air. But a fun question to do when you're sitting around the racetrack with your buddies and you're having an adult beverage, you're in between races, you're taking a race off, whatever it is million-dollar yearling, who do you give the horse to? You got a million-dollar yearling. Which trainer do you give it to? And it really brings up really good debate. It's a fun conversation to have with your horse-playing friends. So I encourage you to have that conversation. It's a fun one.
Definitely. And the kind of, just to help you along, you'll start talking about pedigree. That'll be one of the key things that pushes you along. Pedigree and long-term goals. And, you can really chop it up and have a lot of fun yapping about that. Speaking of yapping, some very good conversations happening at the Paddock Bar this weekend. Had an expanded crew, including two of my oldest friends from Port Washington, Matt Blankman and Todd Newby, in the house. We had Jake Ballas in his boot with Fooch hanging out. We had quite a good crew with all the regulars mixed in as well. We had a new visitor come by who asked a really interesting question, JK. And it's something we've talked about a little bit on the show, but I think it's kind of a perennial, and it's something that fans of the show often ask. So I will throw it out for a little bit of discussion here today. Tanya was her name, and she's somebody who is a huge racing fan, little bit involved in the industry on an ownership level, and successful in a whole other career, but thinking about getting involved in racing. What advice to people who are looking to change their avocation of racing into a proper vocation?
Yeah, I don't, you know, to be honest, they probably should have went to the question.
We have a mute issue, JK, or are we having an internet issue?
No, I'm here. Are you there?
I don't have JK at the moment, so I'll just go ahead and answer my own question. And Matt Bernier has made this observation before to me, and I think it's a good one, especially if you're interested on the handicapping side. The barrier to entry these days, so hello, are we back? JK, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, so I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. I lost you, and then I lost the whole call. We'll have our fine producer, Craig, will edit this, so it'll be seamless on the podcast. But I'm just going to ask you that question again. Somebody interested in getting involved in racing, what advice would you give to them for how to get started?
Well, it's a little bit late, but they probably should have went to a CrushaCon. I think there was like an actual panel of like getting a job in racing. So maybe they could try to look that transcript up or maybe read a follow-up piece on that. I mean, I think the best thing you can do is hang out at the racetrack. Like, go to the racetrack, put yourself in a lot of different social positions where you can meet people that are involved. Get there in the mornings. Most backsides they're not Fort Knox to get to in the morning, but it's possible that you can get back there, hang around. You'll see a lot of people, introduce yourself, talk to people, get into different situations. I'm always a believer in that. And though in any industry, I think the more people, you know,
networking,
the better it is. Not again, it's not even so much like, oh, you can get someone to hook you up, but you can call on someone when you have a question. And you can meet new people and find new things that you can do in the sport that you might not have known existed. You know, I mean, before I got into racing, you know, on the outside looking in, I don't even think I knew there was jockey agents. I don't think I knew there was bloodstock agents, guys that essentially act as real estate agents and say, hey, buy that one, and then they get a piece of it. There's a lot of things that I wasn't aware of. And those are fairly obvious to the novice player, but, you know, but there's even deeper holes you can kind of find yourself in. So that would be my advice, is hang out at the racetrack, meet people, do what it appears that Tanya was doing, which was come up and introduce ourselves to people that are involved in the industry, and kind of find out where you can fit in and go from there.
I think that's good advice for sure. That piece of it is definitely important. Two other ideas I'd throw out there quickly. One idea that Matt Bernier I've heard put forth is start writing about racing. You know, have a racing blog. Get your voice out there and let people see what you're capable of. And it's just a way to establish an identity. I shudder to use the term, but it's kind of appropriate in this case. You sort of establish a brand for yourself just so people have something to identify you with and can sort of see where you're coming from. And then the other idea, and I always joke, and I've made this joke on the podcast before, I think with Gabby Gaudette when she was on, because she's a fellow member of the Saratoga Special alumni. And then, of course, we have folks who've been on the show like Scott Calder, who's a Darley Flying Start program alum. Those are the type of things that are worth looking into. I mean, I think the Darley Flying Start, I think, is more like a college level program, though I'm not sure about that. It's worth looking into, though, because a lot of people in positions of prominence in the industry got their start with that program. Saratoga Specials, maybe even a little bit easier. Yes, you'd have to get yourself up here for 6 weeks, and you'd have to be willing to work ridiculously hard. But if you're working for the Saratoga Special, you have an opportunity to have your, you don't have to worry about half-banditing your trip to the backstretch like JK was describing. You'll have a press pass, and it will be your job for the summer to go and interview Bill Mott or whomever and look for stories, and you will meet people. And I mean, the list of people who've gone on from the Special to do cool things in racing is just enormous. Gabby leaps to mind, but John Panagot, who's the racing manager for Robert LaPenta, he's a former Special guy. Travis Stone, who we talk about all the time, first job out of college, Saratoga Special, before he segued into being the race caller at Louisiana Downs and eventually, of course, Churchill Downs. Brian Natto, who's on TV up here all the time, terrific handicapper, cut his teeth there. So that's an idea to reach out to them, because they have a lot of staff turnover, and it's kind of like a finishing school for people who want to be involved in the racing industry. And if one has the time and the ability, it's something to consider as well. Any other final thoughts on that one, JK?
No, I think you got it covered.
Beautiful. So a couple things going on this weekend that I want people to be aware of. I am going to be doing the Naira Betts seminar in the tent. JK has not committed, but I do have Nick Tamaro on tap. Hopefully we can twist JK's arm into making the trip up here and being the second member of the panel. Going to be early. I think we're going to go from about 9 to 9:25. The anthem is about 9:27, so we want to get there and get the show done with and get down to our spot in the paddock bar, get that all locked up and reserved for what is promising to be a super fun day. Do you know who all, here's my hard sell. Do you know who all is going to be around in the paddock bar on Traverse Day, JK? Have you heard the whole list?
I have heard some of the list. The Boss Man is around. I believe Jack Squared is going to make his, J Squared, Jack Jenkins is going to make his Traverse appear. I think he's actually going to break his Traverse mate. I mean, his, Saratoga Maiden.
Yeah.
He's never been. So yeah, he's going to, oh, Jack's going to love it. So, that'll be fun.
Philly Joe making the trip up.
Philly Joe is in the house. I didn't know that. That's exciting.
Pat Tamaro, sire of Nick, is in the house.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, you're going to be missing out on a party. So everybody should come and, we'll be in our little area, but we'll be zipping up and back, and hopefully we'll get a chance to say hello to a lot of folks. And we hope as many of you as possible can come join us. Traverse Day, it's a good day to get there early. You're going to be there so long anyway. You might as well just go whole hog and roll in at 9 and hang out with us. Some cool stuff going on in tournaments. We had a very successful 28-runner grade 1 qualifier for the World Championship of Handicapping last weekend. That's an event where you put up $580 or you win the entry worth $580. And 1 in 10 advance to the $1 million no takeout finals. The list of qualifiers keeps growing, and we're coming right back on Traverse Day with another one. And that's something I want people to definitely take a look at. The DRFT inventory has blossomed of late. We've got some really cool stuff. You've missed the last chance for the Monmouth in-person contest on Saturday. I highly recommend folks get to Saratoga on Saturday. If you can't, and you can get to Monmouth to play in their super qualifier, that's not a bad idea. But we've also now got events coming up for the Keeneland Fall Contest, for the Woodbine Mile Day Contest, which is going to be on Woodbine Mile Day, of course. I believe that's September 18th at Woodbine in the tent at the top of the stretch. Super cool contest to check out. And then we're already starting to run qualifiers for Santa Anita in October, another one that should be a ton of fun. Have you been playing in many tournaments?
I haven't. I played on Saturday. I played 2 head-to-heads and won both of those, but that was it. I hadn't been playing any. I've been traveling so much. I'm always struggling to get to FedEx to print PPs and then to get to the track. It feels like, or get on some airplane or something. I haven't had the time like I normally have, but I'm gonna start picking it up because I'm gonna try to qualify for Keeneland and for Santa Anita.
Okay, so we'll be seeing your name back on DRF tournaments leaderboard soon. Folks should go to tournaments.drf.com. We've reinstated some free events to start qualifying. Also, another frequently asked question is, I'm curious about tournaments. How do I get started? I would say that the lower buy-in head-to-heads on DRF tournaments are a great way to get a lot of action for a little money and just sort of learn how the website works. What other advice would you have for folks looking to cut their teeth in tourneys?
I would definitely play in the low, even in like, 40, 50, 25, whatever it is, matchups are definitely an easy way to do. You only got to beat one person. So those 20-1 shots, they can hurt obviously in those, but most people don't have them. So you can kind of just kind of pick winners. And those are fun. The other thing I would do is I would hop on, DRF.com or Amazon or somewhere, and I'd order, a copy of Winning Contest Player by Peter Thomas Fornatel. It was the first book that I read before I started playing tournaments. I watched Horse Players. I said, this would be fun. I sure would like to beat this guy, Christian, and this other guy with the cowboy hat on. I would like to make them understand that I can compete. And then I got the book, and then I decided to start playing. So I would definitely get the book. There's a lot of really good information in the book. It is a contest book, but there's handicapping ideas in the book. It's not just contest strategy. There's a lot of things in there. I mean, I know that, Duke talked about a lot of good stuff in there. And there's really good stuff in the book, regardless of the focus on contest.
It was a ton of fun to write. Yeah, there's a whole, the final section is related to specific horses who were picked out for contest purposes. And there's some very interesting stuff. Thank you, JK. The check is in the mail for the Winning Contest Player plug. I happen to have a box of them right up here at the Little House on the East Side. If folks are interested in obtaining a signed copy, hit me up on Twitter, or you can show up at one of the two remaining seminars. They're not really, I keep calling them seminars. They're not seminars. The shows we're doing in the Naira Betts tent. Again, Travers will be there at 9:00 following week, Labor Day weekend. I believe we'll be back to our normal time slot of 11 a.m., and you can purchase a signed copy directly there and get a chance to say hello, which we always very much appreciate. So you are playing in one contest, JK, and I know you can't give too many details because it's for this TV show, Win Place Show. You did a little bit of kvetching on the Friday show about your experience the first time you filmed. This time, did anybody from the producing team have the temerity to get in the way of your betting?
No, that person who got me that time was a little bit more of a higher up in the whole operation the first time. I think we're good now. We were having lunch, and that person walked by and like put their hand on my shoulder, as in like, "Hey, we're not enemies." So that's good. So they split the teams up into. We obviously get the team split up, and then we each have like a producer, I don't know the terminology exactly, but we each kind of have like a head producer that kind of runs each group's kind of situation. And the one who was kind of my producer, my contact or whatever, was a lady named Michelle, and she was good the first time. She was amazing this time. It's almost like she like really realized that like I kind of really actually do this. Like I'm not just. So she was always very like, "Hey, do you need to go bet? Do you need to go bet? Okay, go bet. Come back here. Let's do this. 5 minutes. You got 12. Is that enough time?" She was really, really cool and very accommodating about like giving me time to go and bet. And so she was great. And then I gave the cameraman a trifecta. So he won like $50, and he was jumping up and down as if he had just won the world championship of handicapping. So it was fun. We had a good time this week, and I'm not giving anything away, because win or loss, I would have come back to either film a consolation or the championship. So I will be coming back. So we'll see what happens. The show should be fun. I've heard some people that have seen it. Like at least the first episode, they sent out a little tester thing to people that are involved, and a lot of good feedback. The staff was, the excitement of the crew this time around suggests to me that they loved what happened in the first round of shows, and they really feel good about the product that they're putting out there, because they were really into it this time. Not that they weren't into it last time, but you could just tell it was a nice little energy about it.
That makes perfect sense. Couple of notes on that story. Do you have to go make a bet? That's a question when you're Jonathan Kitchen. There's only one right answer. Need to underline that. And then the other thing, JK talking about his Chris Jericho like enemies list. You do not want your name on that list, people, because it could be 5 years later and he's still going to be bad mouthing you on this podcast. So keep your name off the enemies list if at all possible. JK,
It's a very short list. I always tell people there's only like two people I hate in racing.
Oh, if it was a different kind of podcast, we could have so much fun with this. But I'm too political. I'm too political. We're not going to go any farther down this road. But yeah, get him a boozy milkshake when you see him this weekend. Muggs, huge fan of the boozy milkshake, and maybe JK can expand on the good old enemies list. Here we go. The Garden guys, right on schedule, have arrived. I kind of forgot to send that text to say next week come at 12:15. But so that's my fault. A little production note, and then JK, we're going to get you to do a tale from the track about this weekend. But quick production note, the iTunes snafu, thanks to the magic of producer Craig, the iTunes snafu is nearly fixed. The downloads should resume. I'm going to be conservative and say for Friday's show, you should be able to, from your smartphone, I guess from your iPhone, go to the iTunes website and subscribe so the shows automatically pop up whenever a new one is posted. And I know a lot of people like that. It's their cue to listen. And I know it's been really annoying these last few weeks, and a lot of people have tweeted and texted and emailed, and I apologize, but it's being taken care of. And it's just, you know, this brave new world of technology. Sometimes it takes a little bit of extra doing to get things done. But Craig has been on it, so kudos to him. And that should finally be fixed for real. Okay, tale from the track time. I've given you a lot of time to do this one, so tell it as slow as you want. And obviously we can, you know, no pressure to go too long. We can always come back and hit up another question or do some other stuff toward the end of the show, Jonathan. But tell us about your experience on Saturday night.
Well, I won't say where, because I won't say that.
No, don't be too specific.
I will say there will be some names in here. So I had an okay day on Saturday at the track. It worked out, even though Eric didn't do well. I did well enough, and we were going to – I was at Del Mar, if I needed to be clear about that. We were going to go to dinner. I was with Matt Bernier, Pete Rotundo, the Man in Black, one of Lute's friends. And so we decided that we were going to go to dinner, but before dinner we were going to stop by this little charity thing. Rotundo had tickets for it, so it was right kind of close to where we were going to dinner. So we go to this situation. I had on, and the good thing about going from Saratoga to Del Mar is you can remix some of your fresh outfits. And so I was wearing those florally shorts that I wore that everyone made fun of me about, those black ones with like all kinds of different flowers on them. And I got a black t-shirt, whatever. It's Del Mar, so you don't have to get dressed up for Del Mar. So I was, I wasn't like dressed nice. And you go to this place and there's people with like sport coats on and stuff. It's still Del Mar. But so we go to it's an outdoor thing. So we go to the thing. You know, I got a ticket. I show the ticket. I'll go in. And I go and I get like ask drink orders and I order drinks. And I look up and Rotundo was missing. So I was like, well, let me, you know, the guy wanted a drink. Let me go get it to him. So I go to kind of look for him. And when I go to look for him, a gentleman stops me and says, can I help you? And I kind of like paused and I looked at him and I'm like, what do you know where Pete is? Or what do you mean? I didn't say that, but I said, what do you mean? Can you help me? And I kind of knew where he was going with it, but I wanted him to say it out loud. And so, so I just kept playing stupid. I was like, what do you mean? Can you help me? And he says to me, he starts kind of stammering around, well, can I help you? And then, and finally he goes, what I'm saying is I don't know you, and this is my party. And I looked around and I was like, yeah, you know all these people, trust me. And I didn't say that out loud. I said, well, my name's, Jonathan Kinchin. I'm with the DRF. I'm here with with Pete Rotundo with the Breeders' Cup. You know, he had an extra ticket. We came by here before dinner. And he was like, he kind of backed off. He's like, oh, okay. And then I just
kind of. Can I spell something out and say it so you don't have to?
Yeah, sure.
Plenty of random white dudes walking around not that fancily dressed at the party. But this guy, they didn't get the can I help you treatment. Just throwing that
out.
Here's
the thing. And so we'll pause for a second on that. I've always been my entire life a brown skinned person. I grew up in an affluent area, and I went to a high school that was, most of the people that were at that high school did not have the same color skin I did. I've never been a guy that like ever pulls that card. I think that the world around us and this situation are a great illustration that it matters, but I've never wanted to use it as an excuse for mattering. And so I just try to pretend it doesn't exist. Because I feel like for me personally, I like the challenge of overcoming that situation and that's kind of where the story goes, is me wanting to overcome the situation, not with making a scene or getting bent out of shape, but just spending a little bit of the winnings that I had on the day. So anyways, so we separate, I tell the story and everyone's like, geez. Oh, and here's the other part of it. And this is probably really down the rabbit hole, but I just need to say it out loud so people understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I understand that I chose to wear some shorts with flowers on them and have a sleeve tattoo and wear a t-shirt. Like, I get that I made that choice, and I get that I have to live with what someone might assume from that maybe I wasn't supposed to be at a high society charity event at Del Mar when the Sport of Kings is going on. I get that. I take it as a challenge. So I go back to the friends. I tell the story. We're all laughing. I'm not even upset at this point. I just think it's funny. It's kind of annoying, but whatever. So then they start this auction. And the first item is a picture of Mike Smith, signed picture of Mike Smith. And it's not even like a horse involved in it. It's just a picture of Mike Smith, which is kind of funny. So I look to see.
This is an item you'd be bidding on anyway. I'd just like to throw that out there, knowing your love, Mike Smith.
Right. So a friend of mine that I know, who I've been on his radio show out at Del Mar, Felix, I think his last name's
Taverna. We can give Felix Taverna a plug. Felix is a radio host out there. I was a regular on his show in my pre-DRF days when it was on the Mighty 1090. I'm not sure if he's still there or moved on, but Felix, well-known figure in Southern California racing, knows everybody. His words would be a gold standard for those in the room, just to set up Felix for a second.
So I see him like on the mic. And, so I said, okay, friendly face. And I noticed that the gentleman who had asked if he could assist me was holding the picture that was being auctioned. So I looked at Matt and the guys and I said, I'll be right back. And they all looked at me like, what are you doing? So I go to the front row. He's kind of like stuck at a number. I won't say what the numbers were. He's stuck at a number where no one's like going to go up anywhere. He's like, all right, going once. And I didn't double the number, but I went like higher than I needed to go. And you should have seen the look on the guy's face when he turned and saw that it was me. And then Felix says on the mic, just to like validate that I at least had some right to be there, oh, Jonathan Kinchin, one of the greatest handicappers in the country, comes in strong. And so needless to say, I won the picture, and the guy had to hand it to me. And after making a unnecessarily large bid for a charity foundation. And so it all worked out pretty well. So, whatever. I think it's just, like I said, I'm not trying to get preachy, and we don't talk about political stuff on here very much, but I just think it's just a good story that illustrates that the world around us isn't perfect. But at the same time, I think that you also have to be, you have to look at things objectively. To a certain extent, I understand his questioning, and there's a lot of things, choices I've made in my life that I can control that could have led to that. However, I do think that it's a mistake in the world if you're always jumping to conclusions about things without knowing more about it. So, you know, it is what it is, but it worked out well. Hopefully he'll think twice next time before he offers his assistance, and maybe we'll find a better way to go about it. You know, hey,
racing,
how you doing?
People should know better. Racing people should know better. Yeah, you.
He could have got the same. He could have done the same.
Himself to you and seen what you said, right, and been able to have a line off that. I mean, we're around. Jake and I are on the golf cart on the backstretch last week and going around, and he's like, I'm just like, you know, just pointing people out to me, and like you see a guy dressed. I mean, you know, we won't name names again, but, you know, somebody dressed just like a total slob, just, you know, not in a bad way slob. I was dressed like a slob myself, just hanging out in the backstretch watching horses. He's like, yeah, you know, that guy's worth, you know, billions of dollars. You know, it's racing. You shouldn't be judging a book by a cover anyway. So it's a little annoying to me that the fellow felt emboldened to do that to you for whatever reason he decided it was okay to do so. And I was very happy to hear you shove it in his face like that. Definitely one of my favorite tales from the track ever. And I imagine now at your desk in your war room at home, you will have the frame picture of Mike Smith right next to your win picture from Derby Day of Arklow.
You know, I should sign the picture. Me and you should sign the picture. We could give it away. No, I've got an idea of what I'm going to do with it. But yeah, no, it's and the best part about it, I'll tweet a picture once I get it. The best part about it is like literally, it's not literally. Sorry, I'm not supposed to use that word too much. It's not like a racing picture. He's not like on Zenyatta or on Songbird. It's like a close up of his face. As if you had a crush on Mike Smith, this is a picture that you would want. Because it has
well,
nothing
perfect
to
for
do.
You.
It has nothing to do with him as a rider. It's more like, you know, highlighting his dashing good looks. You know, it's
a handsome man,
it's really
the cherubic smile. What's wrong with that?
Oh, pretty funny.
Oh man, that's good stuff. I had one more thought on this, and it zoomed across my mind, and I'm not sure if I'm going to get it back for this show. But no, I think you handled the situation with aplomb, and I hope you enjoyed the rest of your weekend out at Del Mar. Definitely, definitely memorable in terms of many reasons, not just on the racetrack. Another racing thought from the weekend. We got like 2 minutes. Was there anything else you wanted to unpack that we saw happen on the racetrack or in your travels out at Del Mar?
There's nothing that's on the top of my head. Here's what I will say. I started looking at the probables for this weekend, and holy cow, it is going to be so much fun. These races look amazing. The Ballerina, the Boston Spa, the Alan Jerkins, formerly the King's Bishop, the Personal Ensign. Is Songbird is coming? Is that 100%?
Yes. Well, the last I heard, I mean, you know, it's racing. Yeah. Nothing's ever 100%, but it's the word
Forgo.
Is, we'll see.
I don't see Birdsong's name on the Forgo probables, and I'm praying that that's not the case, but because I really want to bet that horse. But did you see that Idaho is coming for the Sword Dancer?
No, that's interesting, though. Idaho, who's the brother of Highland Reel, right?
You would know better than me, but
I believe
the
so.
Horse won on – the horse won – we tried to beat him at Ascot, and he won, right?
That's right. Yeah,
is that the right horse?
Yep. It's
a
little
fun,
quirky,
exciting,
but should enjoy the ground scenario. Lots of Traverse Day goings on. I already plugged. I plugged the seminar I'm going to do on track on Saturday. I plugged the Grade One World Championship of Handicapping contest. But let me also plug Thursday night from 7 to 7:45. Conveniently sandwiched in between the online seminar Steve Bick is doing at 6. And Andy Serling's at the Post Live at 8. I'm going to be doing an online webinar sponsored by NairaBet about all the Travers Day stakes. A current guest who are signed up, Mike Watchmaker and Travis Stone. If you spin me for Saturday, JK, maybe I'll get you involved in the Thursday night. But folks will also have an opportunity to hear your thoughts, hopefully on Friday at 11, though I'm kind of sensing if I get my way and get you to Saratoga, I guess you may be flying then. Do you have any – have you gone so far as to look at flights yet?
No. Yeah, that might be tricky. We'll see. I mean, if we've never – we're going to have a little production show meeting real quick, but I don't know if people would get annoyed if I did the pod like from the airport because of the background noise. That's always a possibility. I could just do it from the airport and just mute and blah, 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 blah. It just depends. It just depends what time I get traveling. So we'll just have to see. I haven't even looked yet, but I will look.
I tell you what, if we give out 3 to 4 winners again and say another favorite's not going to win, I think people would put up with a little background noise if we can manage that. Just to toot our own horn one more time here. We we try not to do it too much, but sometimes it's deserved. All right, we are out of time on this week's show. JK, I want to thank you very much for sharing your experiences and dropping the knowledge as always. Look forward to doing it again soon. Most of all, I want to thank everybody for listening, especially those of you who ask questions either on Twitter at LoomsBoldly here, at UT Big Hair there, or via the podcast email podcast@drf.com. And also send out a special thanks to the folks who come up to tell us they dig the show at the Paddock Bar. That's been a lot of fun this summer, and we hope it continues through the weekend. We will be back on Friday. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.